The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why God doesn't communicate and make himself known more often. Well, the Bible is filled with all kinds of examples of many varied ways in which God communicates, sometimes through a straight audible voice or a vision or a dream, mostly through the leading of his Holy Spirit. And yet on this program, as you know, we believe that God reveals himself in the subtler ways too, that God also can reveal himself through the arts. That's why the theme of this program is Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today's a pop culture version, and for such versions, we usually bring in film critic Mark Boubian. How you doing, Mark?
Great, Bob. Thanks for having me on again.
It's good to have you. Now, let's see. We've done two shows about Lost and two shows about Star Trek. It's time we made the set complete and did
Star Wars.
Star
That's
Wars
right.
today.
Yes.
Why Star Wars are old movies, so what makes Star Wars something to currently
talk about? They just came out on Blu-ray, and since, as you know, I've been pretty much advocating Blu-ray on the show for any kind of home video, this is the perfect chance to do that and talk about Star Wars. But it gives us all the benefits of Blu-ray. The biggest benefit is that it gives us an excuse to talk all we want.
And of course,
about Star Wars.
All we were as a couple of Star Wars geeks was looking for an excuse. So thank you, Blu-ray, for giving us this excuse.
That's right. That was our excuse for Star Trek too, actually. No, it was the movie.
Star Trek was that the movie came out. But we did a retrospective on the whole history of the series, and then we did the movie itself a couple weeks later.
That's right. Okay, but one of our listeners was very angry
when we did that. He called in and accused us of not doing a legitimately Christian show. Remember?
I remember. I think that maybe we'll have that happen again.
Fun times.
Yeah, so the thing about Blu-ray is that the quality is so good in terms of both image and sound. And interestingly, people love DVD because it was so much better than VHS, so obviously better. Blu-ray is actually even better if you took a metric of it in terms of resolution. The resolution change between DVD and Blu-ray is much greater than that of VHS to DVD. So you get a much greater difference in quality. And so that's one of the reasons I really like Blu-ray. It's not just in resolution, but also in color. So you really get an accurate representation of the film when you see it on Blu-ray. That's something that DVD cannot do. So you really it's beneficial to go to Blu-ray at this point. And most TVs are HD TVs now, so you may as well have something that matches.
The problem is it's so hard to keep up. I slowly painstakingly replaced my VHS collection with DVD. And now what? I got to replace it with Blu-ray. By the time I do that, won't all movies be in three-dimension or holographic or something like that, and the Blu-ray will become obsolete?
Well, yes and no. Blu-ray actually has 3D built into its specification
now.
You have to wear
3D glasses to see it, right?
Well, it depends.
Is there a kind of 3D that you can watch now without 3D glasses?
There is.
That's very interesting.
But it's not. It doesn't work very well. The only one that I've seen commercially is a portable game system, the Nintendo 3DS, which we own. It's really awesome. It looks great, but it's not something that works as a TV because if you don't sit right in the middle and look at it, it doesn't give you the 3D effect. So for a TV set, if you have friends over, you're all sitting off to the side, you lose the effect.
Well, once we have the holodeck that they had on Star Trek the next
then you'll buy a new
I'll
Star
know
Wars,
that I
right?
don't need to get anything new ever again. That'll be it.
Right, exactly, yeah. That would be awesome. Probably a little expensive, though. Who knows?
A wee bit, I'd say.
Yeah. Now, the thing I really wanted to see with Star Wars was actually not so much the image change or the image increase in quality, but the sound, because some of the Star Wars movies just sound amazing, particularly Episode II, which has my favorite space battle.
You have
battle.
Watched all six of the movies on
I've
Blu-ray?
Watched all, I think I have, yeah. I've watched them so many times,
it's
hard to
remember.
So tell
me, what's Jar Jar Binks like in Blu-ray? Mark?
I was going to tell you about the space battle. You're okay. Bringing up something to wreck that. Thank okay. you, Bob. Let me tell you about the space
Misa
battle
on
first.
Blu-ray now.
Right. Yes, he is, but the space battle. Just think about the space battle. Okay. So the battle between
something else when you're watching that guy. Yeah,
that's right. So the battle between Jango Fett and Obi-Wan in the asteroid field is my favorite of all film in all
that's
films.
That's in Attack of the Clones, the second of the
prequels. Exactly, in Attack of the Clones, right? So, but it's not just because it looks so good, but it's because it sounds so good. They use the sound. I think it was a guitar or a bass string run backwards to create the sound of the exploding mine that Jango Fett releases. And it just, it shakes the room when it goes off. And it just sounds amazing, amazing on Blu-ray. So I love it. That I would have bought the set just to get that sound right there if there was no other benefit.
Now, of course, whenever Lucas upgrades his special effects, he changes the story. What did he do this time?
Okay, well, he didn't change the story. He doesn't change the story. He just adds things. Yeah. The stories stay the same. Well, with one exception, I would say.
I hate to ask this, but what did he do?
So, okay. One of the things that he's done when he introduced the new series, the prequels, is that the prequels sort of reflect with a sound, a line, or an image. They tend to reflect at moments the original series.
Like they're foreshadowing it, almost like making a joke.
Yeah, no.
You mean like when 3PO says, "You'll never get me up in space."
I think what he actually referred to it as a rhyme. What you're referring to is a joke that's foreshadowing 3PO not liking space.
Kind of a disingenuous joke because
I don't know. I thought it was okay. Yeah. But the what I'm talking about is when you hear a sound like a line. Han Solo says, this is where the fun begins in Episode 4. In Episode 3, in the opening scene, the first line spoken by Anakin when they're flying through the battle is, this is where the fun begins. So it's that kind of echo that you hear that Lucas integrated into the prequels. Well, what he did with the Blu-rays now is in Episode 3, which is in Episode 3, has not changed at the very end, when Anakin is told that he killed Padme by the Emperor, he's Darth Vader now. This is his first moment as Darth Vader. He's told that he killed Padme.
Right.
He screams, no.
Right.
Yeah. And so what Lucas did is in the Episode 6, the Return of the Jedi.
Jedi. Yeah.
They're hard to keep track of because they're backwards. I'll never be able to keep it straight.
6 is 3 and 3 is 6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, so in Return of the Jedi, at the end, when the Emperor is attacking Luke and he's about to kill him, it's sort of it's a reflection of that. That's his redemptive moment. And it is an appropriate thing, I thought. He says no. And then when he picks up the Emperor, he has that same no, that long drawn out no that's from Episode 3. And it actually, internet is ablaze with this.
I still wish he hadn't done it, though.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot of people don't. And he was silent in this scene. He stood and he's looking back and forth between the Emperor and Luke. And then he grabs the Emperor and tosses him off the edge.
Yeah, but I thought
that's
it worked
original.
Very well. One of the problems I have is, of course, special effects keep getting better. And nobody's more cutting edge than George Lucas.
Right.
But the special effects of the original Star Wars movies were themselves so cutting edge. And I think it's just so important to leave them as a time capsule. Now, I know you can get both versions, so I understand to some degree that's still true. But the problem also is that he can't seem to resist messing with lines. He's done things like Greedo shoots first in Episode 4, because he's getting more politically correct. What I find really ironic is a number of years ago, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas headed this movement before the FCC to stop the colorization of movies, because people were going back and saying, oh, well, if we could have colored movies back in the days when they were only making black and white, we would have colored them, forgetting that a lot of filmmakers continued to make their movies in black and white after color came out. And so as a result of Spielberg and Lucas's efforts, they've now deemed certain movies to be national treasures. And by law, nobody can ever tamper with them, even after the producers die. So after doing all that, what does Lucas do? He goes and he tampers with his own stupid movies.
That's very ironic. I didn't know.
The most egregious is putting Hayden Christensen into Return of the Jedi.
Oh, no. Yeah. Now,
that's horrible.
Well, on that particular one, I'd have to say, though, it looks kind of odd seeing the other actor because, you know, because then it looks like we have two different Annakins. But I understand the point you're making.
Right. You still do have two. You have like four. I think four people have played Darth Vader and Anakin at this point. But and this is interesting because people have mixed opinions about what's good and what's bad and the changes. You know, somebody likes one change and another person will hate that change to the ends of the earth, you know. So
let me settle this. George, just leave him alone and go make something else. If you really want to do something new, finish these nine movies you said you were going to make. It was supposed to be nine. Go make the last three. Quit fiddling with the first six.
Yeah, he's not going to do that. That's too bad, but he won't. But, you know, and one of the things is like he added stuff. The thing I don't like is when he adds not just changes, but he also adds. That's where I have a problem. Like in episode three in Return of the Jedi, he added this music number absolutely embarrassing, stupid. And it didn't need to be
now,
there.
Now, he did. I will say at times he adds things that I like. I mean, in general, I'm still of the opinion he should add nothing.
Nothing, right.
But assuming he's going to add stuff, it's hit and miss. What he did put at the end of Jedi that I did like at the end is he got rid of that really stupid music that they were singing in the woods, and he put in better music. And he also showed a variety of planets celebrating the death of the Emperor, which made sense because it brought in the scope of the whole Star Wars universe instead of having everything be on the planet of Endor.
Right.
So there were some things he did that I thought were improvements on that movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. And especially in the context of seeing of the prequels, because the prequels really did expand the scope of the Star Wars universe as well. And so if the images that we see actually are images of things that we don't see in the original trilogy, but we do see in the prequels. But still, it is important to sort of show that expanded scope.
And he justifies all this by saying Star Wars is an unfinished canvas. But it still bothers me because in many ways, his fans are what made him what he was. And when his fans keep buying tickets and they have favorite lines in the movie, and then later on he takes the line out, such as when Luke said, "You're lucky you don't taste very good,"
to R2-D2,
and then he changed that line because he says he never liked it. Well, okay, maybe you never liked it, George, but your fans that have been going to the movies for years, who are keeping you in business, they do like it. You need to quit messing with their heads. Okay, we're here with film critic Mark Boobian. Star Wars is on Blu-ray. Gives us an excuse to talk about Star Wars. And Mark will share some of the Christian symbolism in Star Wars when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
You're listening to some very cool quality music from The Phantom Menace, and that good music was just about the only thing in The Phantom Menace that I liked, but I do like Star Wars movies in general. Let's welcome again film critic Mark Boobian.
Thanks again, Bob. So you want to hear about the Christian stuff? Well, I think that there are Christian elements to Star Wars. When I first saw it, I didn't. But when you kind of examine it and take it, there's two ways to look at it. The way I kind of look at Star Wars, there's two places that you can see some Christian elements. One is sort of the macro view of Star Wars, where you take the story as a whole. Another is the micro view, where you can see little elements here and there of maybe possible Christian references or things that we can connect to Christianity. But let's talk about the macro first. And Lucas based the story cycle on something called a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. This was written by Joseph Campbell. And the theory is that all myth ever written in the history of humanity, every hero who's ever existed in story has the exact same story cycle. They go through the same steps in their becoming a hero. And so Lucas took this idea, and that's what he did. He integrated that into Star Wars. And Campbell, at the time, I actually agree. Now, to be clear, I agree with this, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. I did several papers on this when I was in college, and I agree that everything I saw looks like this. He is correct, that The Hero with a Thousand Faces cycle is a real thing. That it does exist in history and in all mythology. So I think Campbell is correct, and I think it's interesting that Lucas took this. Now, Campbell explained it, though. He didn't know where does this come from? Why do we have this? Why do all heroes reflect each other? And he used this notion of Jungian psychology, and in the Jungian psychology of the idea of the collective subconscious. We all sort of share this collective, you know, belief system that amongst each other in humanity, and we have for all of existence. And in our subconscious, then, from that subconscious, since it's shared amongst all people, we all have the same hero come out of that subconscious. Now, that was a popular notion at the time the book was written, but has fallen out of favor. Jungian psychology is not very practiced very much anymore, or it's been integrated into other forms of psychology, but as it stood at the time, it does not exist in that same form so much anymore. So it's that idea that Campbell had to explain this, it's gone away, basically. So what do we use now? We have to find some other way to explain this. But even if he were right, even if there is this collective subconscious, I think the answer is very obvious if you take it from a Christian perspective. If you took it from an atheistic perspective, I think you'd have a hard time answering this. From a Christian perspective, though, the answer, I think, is that God wrote the story of the hero on our subconscious as a way of communicating to us what the real hero would look like when he truly appeared. And the real hero that I'm referring to is Christ himself.
And, of course, people with that theory will say that Christ, too, is only a myth.
Correct. That's
and very popular today. They'll say that Christians stole that from ancient Greek and Egyptian myths, and they stole Christianity.
Right.
Or they stole the ideas and then turned it into Christianity.
Right. And so this idea of him fitting the hero with a thousand faces cuts both ways. Oh, he's just a myth like everything else. Or
you're saying maybe God allowed people to have the myths because he was preparing them for the real thing.
Exactly. I mean, how are we going to recognize the true hero when he comes?
Now, some people should realize, too, though, and this is just a quick little sidebar, that a lot of these ancient Greek religions come after the New Testament era, and scholars reason back before that. And even if that were not true, the Old Testament had ideas such as life, death, and resurrection, virgin birth, you know, long before Christ came, and that predates Homer. So just there is another side to that story when you get into this who stole from who.
Right. Now, in this sense, I'm not even really talking about theft of mythology.
Right.
As a Christian, I would say I don't care if somebody stole from whoever. I mean, first off, I do care because I obviously believe in the historical Jesus. So he had to have existed and done the things he claimed he did, the Bible claims he did. So I do believe in that, and I wouldn't say he's a myth per se, but I do say that he follows these steps or the cycle that the mythological hero does, because he is the archetypal hero. He is the hero that God wanted us to know when he came. And this is how he communicated to us. You were talking at the beginning of the show about how the Holy Spirit communicates to us. I think this is one of the ways that he does, is that in the mythology and the stories, in the heroic cycles that we write as human beings, the Holy Spirit influences us in those, and that they all reflect Jesus in some way or another.
Right. So getting back to Star Wars, Anakin Skywalker is born of a virgin.
Right. That's right. I forgot about
and
that.
And ultimately, he fulfills the prophecy that he'll bring balance to the Force. But in the meantime, he goes from being the Christ to the Antichrist, and then he kind of becomes the Christ again.
Right. Well, that would be called every hero has to die. That's one of the key elements to a hero. Being born of a virgin is one element of a hero. Having to die, every hero, and you'll see this in movies all the time, science fiction and myth movies, fantasy movies, I'm sorry, that you'll see this all the time, that the hero dies in order to save humanity. And that's what Jesus had to do. And Anakin's death was symbolic in when he turned to the dark side. That would be called, Campbell called that section the belly of the whale, because that's where you go down to death or go to hell or give in to the dark side or whatever you want to say. Now, interestingly enough, Jesus refers to this himself in a sense. He says that the sign that he's going to give to this generation is the sign of Jonah.
Right.
So Jesus did that too. So it's really, I think that's a really cool connection. I don't think Campbell was connecting to Christ. I don't believe that Campbell was a Christian. At least I don't know if he was. He just named that section belly of the whale, and
but that
was
is where
a reference
the phrase belly
Jonah.
Of the whale came from originally.
Yeah, it was from Jonah, and he knew it. And here Jesus makes this reference. So that's where Anakin fits in, and this death and resurrection. I think Luke also plays a role because he is willing to sacrifice himself. He's willing to die in order to save.
To bring his father back.
And ultimately, his death would save humanity because the emperor would be destroyed.
Which is not only what Christ did, but Moses said that he'd be willing to be blotted out of God's book if his fellow Hebrews could be saved when God was threatening to destroy them. And Paul said he'd be willing to go to hell if his fellow Israelites could be saved.
Very interesting.
They were very much following in Christ's pattern.
Right. There you go. So now, I'm not going to say that Lucas intended Star Wars to be Christian. I don't think he did at all. I think he intended it to be
a modern hero. Myth.
Modern myth, exactly. Yes. But because it's a modern myth, it's going to reflect Christ. Because all myth, in my mind, and I think Campbell points to that, they all reflect Christ. So
now, of course, the Bible also talks a lot about taking our focus off of ourselves and gathering our strength from the Holy Spirit. It's hard not to think of a relationship between the Force and the Holy Spirit, too.
Right.
Maybe we'll explore that a little bit when we return, celebrating Star Wars on Blu-ray and discussing, critiquing, finding allegory in Star Wars. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. We're discussing some of the allegory in Star Wars, intentional or unintentional. Sometimes directors have what we would call Christian allegory in their films. We were talking about the comparison of some of the prophecies about Anakin Skywalker, how they relate to the mythos. What other kinds of allegories have you found, Mark?
Well, Bob, what you were referring to, the Holy Spirit being kind of the Force and the Holy Spirit being a sort of a symbolic connection between the two, that's what I would be calling the micro elements in the film that refer to Christianity, potentially. So that's a good one.
One notable difference is there's no evil side to the Holy Spirit like there is to the Force.
That would be a significant difference.
Also, in the Force, it's very interesting because giving into anger always turns you over to the dark side of the Force. Now, a lot of people would assume that the Bible is anti-anger, but the Bible also actually has God getting angry, has Jesus getting angry. The Bible talks about inappropriate anger, misplaced anger, but there's such a thing as a righteous anger, too, and I'm not sure I'm seeing that
in Star Wars.
Obviously, they invoke it from us, the audience, because we, the audience, get angry, and rightly so, when we see evil in the movie.
Right.
But the key to using the Force is to somehow, you know, the minute somebody gets angry, one of them, usually the Emperor, says, good, I can feel your anger.
Right.
And he's not too subtle in the way he's trying to seduce him by the anger of the Force.
Right. And the interesting thing about Star Wars, though, is that the anger is the anger that's leading to hatred. I think that's one of the elements of the anger that the Emperor feels. It's not just anger per se, but he's anger that leads to hatred. That's the kind of anger that the Bible would be concerned about.
Yes, the hatred. would not be what the Bible would like.
Exactly. And again, we see that in Star Wars, though he does kind of blanket, as you said, anger all encompassing all kinds of anger, but really what we see in Star Wars, what he says and what we see are two different things.
That's right.
So it's kind of an interesting, you know, one of those dichotomies that we see in Star Wars. Another thing is the subtlety of evil, I think, is something that's really interesting in the prequels. I think that's one of the great things the prequels bring to the Star Wars universe. Because we really see the rise of the Emperor and how he comes to
which
power.
Which was very much the way the emperors of Rome took over ancient Rome from the Roman Republic.
That's very interesting to hear. I'm not familiar very much with Roman history, so I don't know much about it.
But they would create people, certain people would create a crisis, like the Spartacus uprising. The Spartacus movie's based on a true story.
Oh, and then
and there were people that tried to use that as an excuse to gain more and more control. Because people will usually trade freedom for security, so they're giving these generals more power to go out and stop the slave uprising. Next thing you know, they're just running everything.
Right. And there's actually a line in Star Wars, you know, for a safe and secure future, though I think he's referring to the Bush administration at that point.
Probably.
Because he's the suggestion that, you know, Bush created the war on terror.
They had lines like, if you're not for us, you're against us.
Yes.
That was definitely a Bush quote.
Right.
And but so, I'll forgive that. I'll forgive that more easily than I'll forgive things like Jar Jar Binks. And
stuff like that. There's no really forgiving Jar Jar Binks, so that's okay.
Well, he was smart enough to take him out of the second two prequels, or at least he was in only a snapshot of the second
A moment prequels. Of each, right. And then he's actually responsible for the Emperor's.
Misa wanna nominate Emperor Palpatine. See, now that fit. That was the kind of thing you could believe Jar Jar would do.
And that's actually it's kind of a funny moment at the same time as being kind of a chilling moment.
I should say, for any of you who may actually like Jar Jar, Mark and I have a friend named Richard. He likes Jar Jar, and he defends Jar Jar when Mark and I just rail on Jar Jar.
Right. Well, he's our Star Wars apologist.
He's our Star Wars apologist, yes.
So... hopefully we won't get a call in to correcting us and from Richard. So he knows a lot about Star Wars. He's quite an expert. In film, we see a lot of depictions of evil. And I've always heard, you know, this movie, like The Devil's Advocate, is the best devil I've ever seen. Or
actually, that
Paradise
was
Lost.
The best devil I ever saw.
Yeah, and I hear that all the time. Bedazzled had a great moment in the original Bedazzled. Which I don't think is a great movie by any means, but still there's a moment in there where the devil has this really hilarious line that's also quite chilling at the same time, and I think is a good depiction of the devil. But here, the Emperor, the way he comes to power, but it's so subtly evil. It's not just him coming to power, but it's also the evil that he does and his rise and his corruption of other people. And the destruction of Anakin, for example, primarily, and his destruction of the Jedi, those things that are so evil. But what leads up to that, he's patient. It takes 10 years to create this clone army. He plans this whole thing out. He is willing to wait for it to happen.
And
he's
plays
meticulous.
Different sides against each
right,
other.
He plays different both sides against each other. It's so awesome, and it's so scary at the same time. And so those are things that I see that I think that we reflect the devil.
One line in there that's just chilling is in the third movie when the Emperor's announcing, we're going to turn our Republic into a galactic emperor, and people are just plotting and cheering. And then Natalie Portman says, so this is how freedom dies, with thunderous applause. I mean, I think we may see times like that in our future if we're
right.
not careful.
I think,
it is scary how people will give up their freedom.
Right.
And just blindly follow something with charisma or security.
Yeah, and so that's a very profound line. Fortunately, it's in one of the best Star Wars movies, in Episode 3. That Episode 3, yeah, people will rag on the prequels.
Most people liked Episode 3, even yes. the ones that didn't like the prequels.
Right. And you hear all these complaints about the prequels. I think the prequels, every complaint, even if I agree with it or not, every complaint, it's worth it to get to Episode 3 because that is such a astoundingly good movie.
And it makes 1 and 2 better. Like, I remember in number 1 when the Jedi Council was interviewing young Anakin as a boy, they were very concerned that he missed his mother. And I'm thinking, good grief, give the kid a break. Of course he misses his mother. But then you get back again to the subtleties.
Right.
You get to movie 3, and the Emperor is using the loss of his mother, which became the fear of losing his wife, which became this obsession with not losing her, to the point where he's willing to give up everything, even his ideals, even his friends. He's even willing to sell them down there. And the Emperor knows this kid will do anything to hold on to his wife.
Right.
And that's what ultimately brings him to the dark side.
Right.
So, you know, in many ways, the third one does make the first two a little bit better.
Yeah, it does. I agree. Absolutely. You couldn't have the third one without the first two. I mean, you need that buildup. You need to see the Emperor's hand in things in order to really understand his corrupting influence on Anakin.
Now, speaking of that, since we are here to review these movies, too, I know Lucas likes to say it's all one movie. But the truth is, different chapters of this had different directors and different writers. They really are six separate movies, even
right.
though they're related.
And so, I think it breaks down because he also was going to make 9 originally, and since he
right.
didn't do that, that ruins the whole idea of him being individual.
But
films.
Go from top to bottom, the ones you like to your least favorite and why, and then I'd like to do the same.
Oh,
thing.
Okay. Well, that's easy. I could just the Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. That is absolutely my favorite. It still is. It introduced to us the Darth Vader theme, first of all. That's one reason right there. Every line in that movie is good, I think. And there's a great blend of comedy and tension and excitement. And it also has my favorite spaceship ever made, the Millennium Falcon. I love that spaceship.
It is a fantastic ship.
Yeah.
I do love that ship.
And I think you connected with
ship.
Han Solo.
They had a Star Wars collection at Balboa Park a
right.
number of years
I saw
ago.
That,
they had
yeah.
the model of the Millennium Falcon, Darth Vader's original helmet. It was pretty cool.
Right. That was an awesome display because you could really see the art that went into the production models. And there, some of the Millennium Falcon was gigantic. It was like 5 or 6
And it's when they were
wide.
Using models. They weren't just using computer graphics
at that
everything,
time,
which made it even more impressive.
Yeah. And the other thing they had is a little tiny... They had the big, gigantic one, and then they had the little tiny one that was supposed to stick onto the side of the Star Destroyer in Episode 5, so you could see both big and little Millennium Falcons because they had to make 2 different models at some point. So I thought that was a really nice thing about that display.
Okay,
as well.
We're here with Mark Boobian on the heels of Star Wars going to Blu-ray. We're reviewing the entire series. We'll be right back. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. back to our program. Mark Booby and our film critic was going through the different Star Wars from favorite to least favorite. He started with The Empire Strikes Back.
That's right. And I have to say, before we move on to the next movie that I want to talk about, The Empire Strikes Back also has the most shocking and famous reveal, I think, in film history. Luke, I am your father. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And,
well, and we had to wait another 3 years to see if that were true or if he was lying to him, because he had said he was going to try to trick him to the dark side
right,
of the Force.
Right, that's true.
So but, it was biting, but we still didn't even know if it was true. So it was also very suspenseful.
Yes, it was. It just was such an awesome moment. And I still remember just being like, no way, it can't be true, because you just so don't want it to be.
See, now, Paul, you have a couple of Mark's favorite quotables from The Empire. Why don't you play a couple of those for us?
Chewie, take the professor in the back and plug him into the hyperdrive.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's like I said, every line in that movie practically is good. Everything Han Solo says is just a great line. That's one of the reasons. But, that movie was not written or directed by Lucas. Lawrence Kasdan and...
Kasdan wrote the screenplay and Kirshner was the director.
Yeah, Irvin Kirshner, yep. That's right. So,
yeah, and I think Lucas could have learned something from that.
yeah, it's too bad
he didn't.
I
think he did a very good job both writing and directing the very first Star Wars movies, the one that got retitled A New Hope.
And now my next in line for favorite movie, Episode 3, he did an amazing job directing this movie as well. It's almost like, who is this guy? Maybe he hired another director and dressed him up as George Lucas and then went behind the scenes, because it's such a totally different movie than the previous three. It's like you can't imagine Lucas being capable of directing a movie so well, because he just had been criticized so badly for the Episode 1 and 2. But I think one of the most telling moments in Episode 3 is when Anakin is making the decision to go to the Emperor to protect him, when Anakin's revealed that the Emperor is the leader of the Sith, and Mace Windu is going to go arrest him, and Anakin's told to stay behind. And he's struggling with, should I go, should I stay, should I go, should I stay? And there's this moment where Padme is across the city, I guess, and in another building, and she feels his tension, and there's the silent moment between the two that you see both of them with the eerie John Williams music being played in the background. It is a beautiful moment in Star Wars, probably my favorite moment in all of the movies, because there's not a line spoken by either person.
Yeah, he doesn't communicated so much sometimes just visually
and
lines.
And by the music too, the tension of the music. So John Williams also outdid himself in this moment too. And then of course Anakin decides to do the bad thing and go try to save the Emperor, and ultimately falls to the dark side right after this. But it's a great moment. And Lucas would never have done silence in a film. Just to imagine him doing something like this in any of the previous movies was unthinkable, because he's the opposite of subtle.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and that's one of the reasons Episode 3 also, I think Episode 3 is practically a flawless movie from the beginning to the end. You have this great, exciting beginning, and it leads slowly to this tragic and terrible and heart-wrenching end that is just so amazing, so well done. Now, my one complaint about this film, though, is that originally when I saw Star Wars, there's no subtlety in Star Wars 4, 5, and 6, the original series, because you have the battle between good and evil, and it's really well-defined and well-delineated. You have the good guys and the bad guys, and there's not really much interplay between the two. But in what we see in Episode 3 is that Darth Vader was a human being. He was this wonderful, likable guy in some ways. And you saw him fall, and his wife, Padme, and that he loved her, and that he's the one that ultimately kills her in this, the tragedy of the whole thing. And then when you go, if you watch Episode 3 and then you watch Episode 4, A New Hope, it changes the feeling of Episode 4 so much. that now I refuse to watch those two in order. I will never do it again.
Although I must say, they have something pretty chilling in episode four, even though it was certainly much more a fun movie. Princess Leia's entire planet is destroyed.
It's destroyed.
That's no small thing.
Right. That is pretty awful. And you get the sense, in episode three, you meet some of the people, or you meet her father and mother, and you see the planet, so that makes it even more of a painful thing. And I think originally, you know, you don't know it. It's just a planet being destroyed, and it's just something horrible that they do, and it's because they're evil. Of course, they're going to destroy a planet. But again, the subtlety, the humanity of Darth Vader is felt in episode four when it really wasn't there before. He's this black masked figure. He's the epitome of evil. Well, now he's not because of episode three.
So that's right.
That's one of the problems, I think, that's introduced by this tragedy.
I think it was a wonderful twist having Darth Vader be Luke's father.
Right,
but then in the next movie, we learn that he's also Princess Leia's father. Then in the next movie, we also learn that he's C-3PO's father because he created them.
Well, see, you want him to make
Lucas,
nigh all
enough,
nigh.
Enough, or he can't be everybody's father.
He might be, though, so maybe it's a good thing that he didn't make three more.
Okay, so your first two favorites are Empire Strikes Back, Revenge of the Sith. What comes next?
Then it gets to be tough because I like a lot. Like, I like episode four and I like episode two. I think episode four, probably the original Star Wars movie, definitely has to be up there too as one of my favorites, just because it's the first one and it captured our collective imagination so well. As I mean, it's become this cultural thing. Star Wars is, here we are talking about it. How many years has it been? And what won the Academy? Yeah, what won the Academy Award for Best Picture the year Star Wars was out?
Unfortunately, I know that one. It was Annie Hall.
Annie Hall.
But it was a pretty.
Who cares about
movie.
Annie Hall? Yeah, you got to be a huge Woody Allen fan. But we're not going to be talking about that movie 30 years later. But here we are talking about Star Wars. So it really was an amazing thing that Lucas did. He really captured our imagination as a culture and around the world too. And then I think I'll just jump to my least favorite from here. Episode one is just,
which is the
very
least favorite
film.
Of most people.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and I, you know, the irony of this is, I think one of my, the greatest, most exciting time I ever had in a movie theater was the debut of episode one. We saw it opening night.
We've been waiting for so many years.
And
for it.
People were screaming. I
and
mean,
I,
the
I
titles
was with
came
Mark,
out.
By the way, and he's one of the ones that screams. He loves going
yes,
to these. He loves that movie joint community euphoria.
Right. I'm not the quiet guy that likes everybody to be silent. So if you go to a movie with me, you got to watch out. I'm gonna cheer and stuff. So
and it's,
I don't
it's
talk over
fun.
The film per se, but I will.
No,
I
yeah,
will
he,
cheer.
It's good that he does at least shut up once the movie
yeah,
starts.
Shut up when I'm supposed to. So, but. Yeah, there was such an amazing, exciting experience to see this movie after all these years of waiting. Exactly. It was just a great moment. But it turns out to be the worst Star Wars movie made. So it's I have this kind of double feeling about it, this mixed feeling. But it's still an enjoyable film for a lot of reasons. It's not a terrible, terrible movie, but it just doesn't live up to the whole series.
Okay, we'll be back with film critic Mark Boobian reviewing the Star Wars movies new to Blu-ray.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with film critic Mark Boubian. We're also joined with Paul, who does a great job on the board op. Hey, Paul, what are your best to worst? What are your favorites and least favorites of the Star Wars series?
I would go Episode 3 is my favorite, then Empire, then New Hope, and then Jedi, and then Episode 1 and Episode 2.
Okay, now you...
See, I didn't like Episode 2 at all. I think that was the worst of them.
So oh,
now,
really?
You mentioned earlier that you were disappointed when they put Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker in Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
But yet Episode 3 was your favorite. Do you feel that Anakin's performance as an actor got better between Movie 2 and 3?
Absolutely. I think... Hayden Christensen spent those 3 years taking acting lessons. Because Episode 2, he was terrible, and he was actually passable in Episode 3.
You know,
especially when he turned evil.
Yeah. I must say this. I thought he was terrible in Episode 2 until I rewatched the first 3 movies, or 4, 5, and 6, however you number them. And I saw Luke himself acting like that when he's a kid. Oh, but it's another whole year. Gee whiz. First I'm hearing that, I'm going, that can't be Darth Vader. But then I'm thinking, well, you know... He's a lot like his son was. The other thing is, I think perhaps the problem was less the acting and more the lines. Lines like, I truly, deeply love you. I mean, even Natalie Portman couldn't save that line. So
right.
I think he had an impossible script and maybe some bad directing. Although, unfortunately, it certainly came across as if it was bad acting.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that a lot of times we probably blame the actor for the director's issue.
Yeah. If they have them overact, that's, and the director's telling them to do it. Here's how I would go. I'm with everybody on Empire. I hesitated. Part of me wanted to put the original Star Wars first because it did introduce the characters, as Mark said. It was the original genius, but I must confess, I liked Star Wars. I loved Empire Strikes Back. That's what just drew me in. I would go Revenge of the Sith next, Attack of the Clones next. I didn't like the Phantom Menace much either, and I had to struggle between whether to put Phantom the very worst or Jedi the very worst. And it was especially a struggle because, without doubt, Jedi is a more entertaining movie to watch. Jedi has a fantastic beginning with the rescue of Han Solo from Jabba the Hutt, and it has a fantastic ending. But it has this problem of this horrible middle where you're on the forest moon of Endor, stuffed with teddy bears. The situation gets exasperated by the fact that when Lucas finishes that movie, for years he won't make any more Star Wars movies, but he makes 2 Ewok adventure movies and does an animated Ewok series on Saturday mornings. And it made me hate the Ewoks. Now, on their face, the Ewoks, if they had only been in a bit of the movie, they were cute. And I actually liked the Ewoks more than I liked Jar Jar Binks. Jar Jar Binks was the worst character. But the Ewoks were in more of Return of the Jedi than Jar Jar Binks was in Phantom Menace. At first, Jar Jar looked like he was going to sink the whole movie. But once Anakin was brought into the movie of Phantom Menace, Jar Jar became much more a background character. So it's a little bit of a photo finish with those last two. But because of the Ewoks, and because while they were on the forest moon of Endor, you never got a sense that people were in any real danger. And because Lucas himself has admitted that he didn't have that much more of the story to tell. And that he padded it out.
Happened to 3 whole movies worth, though?
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. We weren't supposed to see the destruction of the Emperor in the third movie.
We weren't supposed
to have the identity of the other reveal. He got very tired, and he tried to cram it all in.
It's too bad.
It would have been better if he had made those other 9 movies. But anyway, I do want to give a plug for the ride Star Tours, though, the new version of it. I loved the ride when it first came out, but for years I was going, boy, they need a new version of this. You were even seeing lines in the film. Now it's digital. It's 3-dimensional. It's fantastic. It has all these different combinations of endings and middles. So many more creative things with the robots and things when you go through line. I won't give any of the lines because, A, it would spoil it for the audience, and, B, Mark would kill me because he hates it when I do that kind of thing. But I'm telling you, if you liked the original Star Tours, you are going to love the new one. It is really, really worth it. And it's one of those things where Disneyland does what I always wish they'd done, gives you more to look at while you're in line. That's the only ride at Disneyland where I'm not in a hurry to get in line because the robots and the interactions are hilarious, and the things on the screens are so much fun. to look at, and you really do feel like you're in another world. You really do feel like you've gotten on a ship. I felt they accomplished a lot of that in the original version too, but this new version is so much better. So I want to give a plug for Star Tours. How come they're not paying us to do all these plugs?
I don't know. They should.
We're not making one freaking cent off any of this.
A couple of free rides on Star Tours would be awesome. Kidding. Let us to the front of the line at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't wait to try Star Tours again. That was always my favorite ride at Disneyland,
absolutely,
even until they redid it. I mean,
absolutely.
The very day that they said, you can't come on because we're rebuilding it, I was like, I love this ride. And it fell out of popularity, so you could get to the front really easily. That was
on the other hand, Pirates is closed down and being completely remodeled, and I have a feeling that when it comes back, it's going to
look like a movie.
It's going to be nothing but an infomercial for the movies, yeah, which bothers me.
Kind of the irony of
we're
that.
We're going to see Johnny Depp and hear about Jack Sparrow at every turn now, and it's too bad because it was such a good ride.
Well, you know, and the irony there is that it inspired the movie, and now they're going to redo it to be like the movie that it inspired.
Yeah.
Now it's inspired by the movie, so it's kind of, wow, where does it all end?
It's too much. It's too much. I kind of like using our imagination. I don't want to have to recognize every pirate as some actor from the movie. So
right.
That's the good news, bad news thing about Disneyland.
But you know, it is an old ride, so you can't hold it too much against them to redo it. And Star Tours, for example, them redoing that and making it changeable so that when you ride it multiple times, you're not going to see the exact same thing every time. Those are good ideas.
Change is a double-edged sword. I'm a big believer in change if it's being changed for the better. When things get changed for the worse, such as some of the changes that Lucas has made in his movie, then it's not a great thing.
Right, yeah. Greedo shooting first is terrible.
Oh, I remember a few years ago, my girlfriend and I went to Julia, and I couldn't wait to go to my favorite steak place there, and we ran into somebody first says, "Oh, you're going to love it. The restaurant's under new management.
Oh.
There's been a lot of change." And when I heard that word change, well, for one thing, Obama had just been elected with the word change. And I started thinking, great, what this probably means now is they won't have those big, beefy ribs that I like. And they didn't.
Right.
They were taken off the menu. I think the restaurant's run by a vegetarian now.
Yeah, well, speaking of change, too, in Star Wars, that's one of the, one of the problems with the prequels is it sort of changes the feel of the series. Now, the other thing is that I wanted to talk about is the Clone Wars, the TV series they've been
running. Oh, yes. Now, I haven't seen too much of that.
Now, that's the problem with that, too, is that it has the potential to change the feeling of the movies because they're going to be doing things in between that take place in between Episode 2 and Episode 3, that the fighting the Clone Wars in this animated show. And the show is really well animated, I must say. I actually liked Jar Jar in the episode they have Jar Jar. He's voiced by Ahmed Best, so it works really well to have him be the voice of Jar Jar. You start to see the origin of General Grievous as a person, as a human. You see images of him as a human. So, and that's a revelation in Episode 3 that he's a person. And so there's some really interesting things that they're doing with the show that
are
great.
Is it weird watching it in animation when the chief thing about Star Wars is such state-of-the-art, realistic-looking special effects? And then
animation. It's for kids, and so it being animated, it sort of removes you from the reality of the Star Wars movies. But it still works because it ends up being for a younger audience. And it's a little bit lighter. Anakin is much lighter of a character than you ever could imagine. And he's got his own Padawan.
He's not voiced by Hayden Christensen, is he?
No, he's not. He's voiced by somebody else. There's just a few people like Anthony Daniels is a voice, Ahmed Best. And I think there's one other. The guy, Matthew, I can't remember his last name, but he's the person that does General Grievous. He did him in the movies as well. So you've got those three people. And that's really good because they anchor those characters very well. So you get to see some Jar Jar, but there's some changes, like Obi-Wan fights General Grievous in one of the episodes, and in Episode 3, Obi-Wan fights General Grievous for the very first time, very obviously, in Episode 3. So that's the kind of thing that you don't want to see those changes occur in other elements of Star Wars because they taint and kind of take the wind out of the sails of some of the stuff you see in other movies, and it's a mixed blessing in a way, and that's, I think, the prequels are equally a mixed blessing, but, you know, again, we rank Episode 3 as one of the top Star Wars movies ever made, so you live with that, you know, but it's good and bad.
All right, Star Wars new to Blu-ray. Mark, we'll have you on again soon. We probably got to hear your opinion on most of the stuff that came out this summer. We haven't had a chance to do that yet. So we'll have you back on again soon. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. I will see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.